How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
We certainly recognize that in zoo medicine, that we these days really try to rely on available experts to assist us, so we make sure we get procedures done efficiently and correctly for the animals.
They're not gourmands. They're not trying to get to marrow because it tastes so good. They're trying to get to marrow because they're starving, right? No lion is out there trying to get to the delicious marrow in that wildebeest's femur. They're just trying to get anything.
Most of our animals, we can't do much, but our sea lions, they get their teeth brushed on a daily basis with chlorhexidine dental rinse and a toothbrush, which definitely helps.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode number 290. Whoop, my name is Andrew.
And this is Michelle, and welcome to our dental podcast. And we have our boss on, Brittany.
Boss is here.
Hello, everyone.
Brittany Duncan, who keeps me and Andrew from killing each other, probably on a weekly basis.
The glue, keep everyone together.
Exactly.
Like that's an exaggeration.
Yes. So if you all don't know, if this is your first time and you're just tuning in, because we've got a really cool topic today, we are a dental hygiene dental podcast.
Dental, yeah. Adjacent. And we clue in all sorts of different things.
Yes. Okay. Andrew doesn't like when I just call us a dental hygiene podcast.
Don't limit our potential.
Yes. But we are dental hygienists. And we started this podcast so many years ago, and it was just me and Andrew. And then we found Lacey and we found Brittany. And that is our wonderful team that keeps us going. And Brittany brought us a really cool topic this well. Andrew, wasn't it your, it might have been your idea.
Well,
and then
actually, I think
you failed us in finding somebody.
Well, I mean, okay,
and then Brittany had to come through.
I feel like we actually had like a team meeting about this. Like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to like do the crossover between the animal world and the people world?
Because don't you think a lot of hygienists want to clean animals' teeth too?
Do you see those posts all the time?
Like, yeah.
Hey, who scales their dog's teeth? Yeah. Or who scales their cat's teeth? Yeah.
With the cost of those veterinary dental cleanings, I'm not surprised.
I'm like, just let me in there. I could do it.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, by the way, in many states illegal.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
Let's not even get into that right now. But yeah, so we had this team meeting. We had this idea. It's like, okay, let's bring on and figure out like how different is this really going to be? So anyways, and then I failed, as you said, spectacularly in getting some guests. I shot big, right? Like it was Steve Irwin, if everyone knows who Steve Irwin is, Crocodile Hunter. And I shot like for his family to come on. And so they said no. They politely declined within like 20 minutes. Like, no, you guys are nobodies.
Minions. Yeah. Like, who are you?
We brought on probably the second best.
Yeah.
Like, right below them on the ranking of like two amazing people for this. Like, it's boom. It's easy. But Brittany found for us.
Yeah. And I'll give a little shout out to Chew on this podcast and a story they talked about with this crocodile that had impacted teeth removed. That was absolutely fascinating and is really what turned us on to larger animals and talking about the zoo. My family has a longstanding connection with Audubon Nature Institute, and the Audubon Zoo in New Orleans has a very special place in my heart. If you're ever in New Orleans, please go visit. But thanks to my wonderful father-in-law, Kelly Duncan, who serves as the president of the Audubon Commission, and Mr. Ron Foreman, who serves as the president and CEO of the Audubon Nature Institute, they were able to get us connected to today's guests, who are Dr. Robert McLean, who is the senior veterinarian at Audubon Nature Institute, and Dr. Aaron Ribka, who is an owner and veterinarian of Gulf South Veterinary Dentistry and Oral Surgery.
Yeah, they were great. They were such great guests.
So fun, very knowledgeable.
And they had so many questions.
Do you know what was also kind of interesting to me? And this is so like, I'm such a dum-dum, but like, you think, okay, don't agree too hard on that one. But you think like, okay, you have like in veterinarian, like science, you have dental and you're like, okay, that's good. I get it. Like there should be a subset for dental, but then they're like, no. And then there's a subset of a subset. I'm like, oh, this is dentistry. This is full on dentistry
in the vet world.
The vet world.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh. So it was so exciting. Everyone, you're going to really enjoy this.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add to that?
I don't.
Okay. Well, enjoy this episode on for vet. What would we call this?
What we call it? Vet ventistry or something?
Ventistry.
Yeah.
Before we get to the interview, we want to say a big thank you to Paradise Dental Technologies, or PDT, for supporting the continuing education portion of this podcast for so many years. If you do not know already, many of our full-length episodes count for CE. You'll find the links in the show notes, or you can sign up for our newsletter by going to ataleoftwohygienists.com. When you sign up for the newsletter, we will periodically send out links to shows that have expiring CE courses attached. And none of this could be possible without the support of the amazing people over at PDT. So check out their hygiene and other instruments at pdtdental.com. That's pdtdental.com. Now, on to the interview.
All right, listeners, we have a very fun interview, I suspect, one that's kind of outside of our norm, but still in the same vein of dentistry. We have two vets on that are going to talk to us about animal oral health, and I am so excited to do some comparisons and also learn some really fun facts. So I want to welcome Dr. Bob McLean and Dr. Aaron Ribka. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Awesome. Dr. McLean, when you want to start and introduce who you are and what you do?
Yes. So I'm Dr. Bob McLean, and I work as the senior veterinarian for the Audubon Nature Institute in New Orleans. I primarily work at the Audubon Zoo, and I've been here for about 15 years. I came a year after Katrina, after I completed a residency in zoological medicine in North Carolina.
Dr. Ribka, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Tell us a little bit about you.
I am Aaron Ribka, and I am residency trained. Just took my final board exams, waiting for the results on that, for my specialty boards in veterinary dentistry and oral surgery. So I'm associated with a much larger group. We're actually the largest veterinary dental group in the world. It's veterinary dental specialties and oral surgery. My New Orleans contingent is Gulf South Veterinary Dentistry and Oral Surgery, and I have a satellite in Pensacola, Florida as well. But I'm associated with clinics all over the West, California, Florida, Nevada, kind of all over the place, part of a much larger group. And that's all we do.
Can we go into a little bit of the education of kind of the backgrounds? I would love to see. One of the big hot topics in dentistry right now is portability. You say you move around, like you're, you know, helping in different locations. Like that is not really very easy to do in our side of dentistry. So can we go back to, first of all, what does it take to become a veterinarian, but then all the specialty stuff? What does that look like?
Well, Bob and I both graduated from the University of Wisconsin, which is how we know each other. He was a couple of years ahead of me. So we both did a four-year program at the School of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Bob went, I'll let him talk about what he did. He went pretty immediately on to some crazy stuff. And I moved to New Orleans and worked in general practice and in primate medicine for several years, but always wanted to do dentistry. So eventually went back. And at the time, I had three small children and couldn't go on to move somewhere to do a full-time residency. So I did what's at the time was called an alternate pathways residency. It took many years. It was a lot of travel and back and forth, but different veterinary specialties have different length residencies, different requirements. The dentistry and oral surgery residency is generally about 3 years. The way I did it was a minimum of four. There are part-time residencies that are now 4 to 6 years. Bob's residency was a little bit different. There's surgical residencies, internal medicine, and then everything, kind of everything you can think of. So I don't know what your residency was like, Bob.
Well, I was just going to say, during the 4 years of vet school, we also had an opportunity, which isn't available at every vet school, to do a short course in dentistry. So that kind of laid some groundwork for me to feel somewhat more confident in doing some minor procedures as they're presented. So we were lucky in that sense. I myself did an internship in small animal medicine after vet school. I worked in doing tubal ligation in white-tailed deer for a couple of years outside of Chicago. That was very interesting, with the idea of going on to a zoo residency, which I managed to get into in North Carolina, North Carolina State University. And then, like I said, came to Audubon. Now, just because I've dabbled in some dentistry does not make me an expert or as proficient as someone like Dr. Ripka, for sure. We certainly recognize that in zoo medicine, that we these days really try to rely on available experts to assist us. So we make sure we get procedures done efficiently and correctly for the animals.
My perspective is that overall, and I tell my clients all the time, that we have done as veterinarians not a very good job of training veterinarians in dentistry. All of our patients have mouths. You know, most of them have teeth. Even birds need, you know, there's beakology. You have to take care of their beaks and things. I don't do birds. That's a Bob question for sure. You know, even reptiles have teeth and, you know, different kinds of teeth and things like that. But we do a really terrible job of actually educating veterinarians in vet school. It's changing. The AVMA just last summer has now mandated a minimum number of dental instruction hours during vet school. So that's brand new. I mean, I graduated almost 20 years ago. And like Bob said, very, very lucky that we had any dentistry at all. We had a board certified veterinary dentist on staff at the school. And I think we got 3 hours of lecture during junior surgery. But then, like he said, there was an elective we could take fourth year that, of course, geeks took it. I even won the award at the end of the year.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah. That was super geek. Dentistry is what got me into veterinary medicine though. So it's kind of a long story, but it's unfortunate, and I hope that things will continue to change and we will do a better job of training veterinarians, because dentistry is, if you're in general practice, we do it every day. And periodontal disease in small animal patients is the number one disease, more than obesity, more than anything else. So it's very, very under-treated. It's not generally treated appropriately or thoroughly. And you know, this is my soapbox. I love to get up and we travel around and teach veterinarians. We do continue education all over the country and all over the world, trying to educate general practitioners in what they don't know because they didn't get it in vet school. And you have to kind of like this stuff. I'm sure you guys know, not everybody likes to work in the mouth. A lot of people think it's just kind of gross and it's hard. So, you know, people like things to be easy. You know, there's a reason that they say it's like pulling teeth does not mean it's something that's easy and quick and super straightforward. So, you know, hopefully we'll start doing a better job, but it is definitely underdiagnosed, undertreated disease in companion animals for sure.
So Dr. Ripka, if I can just kind of go back. So you say that you don't really care to do the birds, but do you have a range of these small animals that you normally see that you are not necessarily specializing in, but this is what you do? And then there's a different type that would do the larger animals?
Yep. So in the American Veterinary Dental College, there are two tracks, three, I guess, really. There's a small animal track and then the large animal track. The equine really is what we're talking about. We all have to know at least something about horses and rodents and lagomorphs and all of the other little pocket pets. We're tested on all of that, at least in the first phase of board testing, board exams. But if you choose, you can do the equine specialty. I do not do that. I don't float teeth. I am not an equine specialist. I don't do large animals. The vast majority of my patients are dogs and cats. I did see a possum last week, and I've done some fun stuff at the zoo with Dr. McLean. It's always exciting. And again, I got my start in primate medicine. So that's actually how I got into veterinary medicine in the first place, was being handed a scaler and told to clean that monkey's teeth, and was, wow, this is so cool. And here I am. Here I am 25 years later, 30 years later. So
I want to come back to the scaler thing in a little bit, because I'm very interested in the tools and the things that you use. But Dr. McLean, before we move on to that, I want to talk about maybe some of the issues that you're seeing, like on maybe not a daily basis, but with some regularity as regards to dental issues.
So in zoo medicine, it's a little different. A lot of our animals, we don't see, or we can't see their mouth on a regular basis. A lot of our mammals, we have them on either an annual or a biannual full exam schedule. So we may not see them really well for 2 years in some cases. So we do see a lot of periodontal disease in some of these animals. We'll find fractures that we didn't know about. And what I was saying about being somewhat proficient is helpful, because we often don't find these until the animal is under anesthesia. This is not something we want to repeat necessarily in a few weeks, arranging with Dr. Ripka. Now, we have done that many times when we think it's safe to do so, or we absolutely want to do endodontics. I don't do endodontics. I don't do root canals. I have done them. I've done three in my life on monkeys. They all went well with gutta percha. It took me forever. So it's not the greatest for, you know, an anesthetic event for me to try to tackle that. However, you know, if we have a fracture and it looks bad, and I can take it out, you know, I can do surgical extraction, you know, with a flap, which if we decide to do it right then and there, we can get it done. So most zoo veterinarians have at least some basic knowledge of extractions. Now, not all extractions are simple, and there are definitely complications, so we may choose not to try it. And sometimes, you know, it's such an old problem that it's, you know, very difficult to get out. What I will say is, when we do our periodic exams, we always try to make time to do a good prophylactic cleaning. So we will do a scale and polish. We'll do some periodontal treatments if it looks like that's appropriate. And then we also have dental radiology. We have a digital CR system that we use, a mid-mark system, which is great to have. 5 years ago, I didn't have it. So we were trying to rely on just bilateral oblique radiographs, which, you know, we all know here that those can be inadequate unless you have very severe disease. But we do try our best to maintain good oral hygiene and dental care in the animals when we see them. I will say we, you know, also prophylaxis. So most of our animals, we can't do much, but our sea lions, they get their teeth brushed on a daily basis with chlorhexidine dental rinse and a toothbrush, which definitely helps.
Can you sign up for a job like that? Like, if I'm in the New Orleans area, I'm just, is there like a list I can put my name on?
The behind the scenes tour. You're like, how do I get in there?
Like, how does one sign up for that job? Just if they're in the location or in the area.
What I did want to say is that sea lion teeth are pretty interesting in that they appear black. So they look diseased. If you look in their mouth, you're like, what is wrong with your teeth? But they acquire a chromogenic bacteria as they grow, which turns their teeth black. It's completely normal. But if you hadn't seen it before, you wouldn't know. But like I said, we do try to take care of their teeth.
So if they have that just kind of naturally and you remove it, does it alter their microbiome in any way? Like, you would want to keep it, or you should try to remove it? And is also the chlorhexidine the reason for the black?
It's a stain. No, you'd have to do some kind of whitening treatment, which we wouldn't do, obviously. But no, I don't think it would affect them negatively, but it's not something that's a concern.
Does chlorhexidine stain the same in animals' mouths like they do in humans?
That's a good question. We really only use it in the sea lions other than a periodic prophy. So I couldn't tell you. They're already black, so I don't know what it would do.
They're not a good case study.
It's funny because that was the... I listened to that whole part of the podcast before I got on. And so when you said, you know, whiten them, I'm thinking, oh, we could just etch them. Ha, ha, ha. We would never do that.
No.
Never do that ever, ever. I was horrified listening to that little piece of that show.
Yeah, trust me. Those are our same thoughts. Yeah.
Like people or animals. No.
We use a 2% chlorhexidine rinse, and we use that when we make our pumice. We actually mix that with pumice. I don't like the little prophy cups and things because they've got fluoride, and I do a lot of stuff that I don't want fluoride on until after we're done. I think the thing is that in veterinary patients, in our companion animals, you know, we're recommending chlorhexidine rinses and toothpaste, enzymatic toothpastes and things. Home care is so minimal that I'm not familiar with chlorhexidine staining in people, but I would imagine that they're using a lot more chlorhexidine more regularly than any of our patients are. So no, I've never seen chlorhexidine staining, tetracycline staining, all sorts of metal staining, all sorts of other things, but not chlorhexidine.
Where are they getting the tetracycline staining?
So if you give very young animals tetracycline, they will end up with intrinsic staining of their teeth. They take it up into the dentin.
It's interesting. Tetracycline has also been used as a biomarker to age animals. On some studies, it's been given in order to stain the teeth at a certain age to then later be able to tell how old it was. I don't know all the particulars, but I thought that was fascinating. It could be used that way.
I have so many questions. I'm like, do I ask about disease etiology, pain management, biofilm management, infection control? I'm like, I have so many questions.
We only have like 20 more minutes, Michelle. So let's get all these questions out quickly. Let's rapid fire these things.
My brain is like a slideshow right now. I'm like, which slide do I stop on?
I'm curious. Can I hop in and ask a quick question?
Yeah. And also audience, Brittany, our manager, our person that everything. Controls all of our stuff that we do. Is on the interview.
Hello, everybody. One of the things when we were looking into having this episode about animal oral care, we saw this video of a crocodile who had an impacted tooth and it had regrown, which I didn't know animals could do, but apparently crocodiles can regrow their teeth. And so as they were pulling out what they thought was going to be one impacted tooth, it ended up having, you know, five fragments of teeth that had regrown. And each time, from my understanding, they're bigger. And so the last fragment was very large. Are they the only animal that does that? Or is that a common...
So, yeah, we, as Dr. Ripka mentioned, a lot of our animals, certainly in the zoo industry, have different types of teeth. I believe crocodilians have thecodont teeth. So the teeth is basically in the jaw, but that tooth can regenerate because they lose teeth frequently. And I think there's a term, I think it's polyphodont or something, where animals can make multiple teeth, like a shark. But then we have other animals, snakes and some lizards have acrodont teeth, where the tooth is just basically attached to the top of the jaw. And it can be shorn off, but that tooth isn't coming back. And there's nothing really we do with those teeth from a dentistry standpoint other than to try to manage abscesses sometimes or, you know, bone infection. And say we talked about horses or equids, and some ruminants have the hypsodont teeth where they'll continuously grow. And Dr. Ripka, correct me if any of this is incorrect since you... Since you're studying all this.
All sounds right so far.
She talked about floating teeth. That's a slang term we use. Oh, that's a medical term we use and usually for horses. And that's basically taking a file and filing down the teeth so they don't get overgrown. They can get sharp areas or they can get overgrown or irregular And it's something that is normal dental care in a horse. So we call it floating teeth. And a lot of lay people have licenses to be able to do this, depending on the state they're in. We try to float our small ruminant teeth. We have sheep and goat herds for our contact yard. I think about a decade ago, there was a paper that came out showing that we got a couple of years more lifespan on these animals if we tried to periodically float their teeth and manage their dental arcades. So we do try to do that periodically. I had a sable down at our Alliance for Sustainable Wildlife on the West Bank, which is a breeding facility. It was a pre-ship exam. We were going to ship it out, but we did a full float on her teeth while she was under anesthesia because she had some irregularities. So like I said, it is something we do, and there are a bunch of different types of teeth. Dr. Ripka mentioned a lagomorph. That's a rabbit. For those listeners that don't know. Terms. Yeah. And they have unique teeth in that they have a second set of incisors that are behind their front two incisors, which is why they're called a lagomorph. Do you know what that's called, Dr. Ripka? I don't remember.
Put me on the spot, Bob. No, I don't, because as soon as I passed that first exam, I forgot everything I had to know about rabbits. My vet tech is deathly allergic to rabbits, and she told me if I ever decided that I wanted to start working with them, she would quit. And she can't even be in the same building with them. She can't breathe. So I do not do pocket pets or anything like that. But all of these small rodents, you know, chinchillas, you know, flying squirrel, all these things that have become so popular. And Dr. McLean can, you know, Bob can attest that when we're talking about these small companion animals and reptiles, husbandry is absolutely essential to maintaining them properly. And part of that is feeding them correctly. So if you don't feed these animals the right thing, they get malocclusions because they're not chewing properly. They're not wearing their teeth down. Their teeth do. And some of these animals have kind of regular teeth. Horses have incisors just like ours, but their cheek teeth grow continually. So they have to constantly be wearing them down. And if they're wearing them down irregularly, because they're chewing wrong, they get hooks, they get points, and that's what the floating. Floating is really just a giant rasp that you go in and you take the sharp points off of these teeth so that they can be comfortable. And we can see all sorts of cheek trauma, you know, get mandibular jaw infections, abscesses, all sorts of terrible things can happen as a result of not having the proper occlusion. And that in large part happens because they're not being fed properly. So I think this is less of a problem at the zoo because they know how to properly feed these animals. But when we see them in the companion spaces, you know, they're not necessarily getting Timothy hay. People are feeding them carrots and lettuce and apples and things that don't wear their teeth properly. Guinea pigs, horrible malocclusions, and their jaws don't open very wide. And there are all sorts of special, you know, like I said, I don't do this, but there are veterinary dentists out there who do whole setups to get these little tiny animals and float their little teeth, basically, and continually growing incisors in our rodents. Again, if they're not given proper things to gnaw on, we see teeth grow through the palate. We see teeth grow through lips, through lower jaws. I mean, all sorts of really horrible things. And then animals die because they can't eat. So yes, like bird beaks, incisor teeth sometimes need to be trimmed, depending on what species you are.
That I did know about bird beaks, because it can almost like curl in on itself, almost like a toenail. Is that correct?
Yeah, if it doesn't get worn properly. And like Dr. Ripka is saying, a common presentation in guinea pigs is tongue entrapment, because the cheek teeth will grow over the tongue.
What?
Because it's a malocclusion due to overgrowth, and then they just keep growing and they'll curve over the tongue. So, I mean, dental care in these pocket pets is a huge need in the industry.
And it really just kind of comes down to just not having the right diet.
Yeah, they don't have enough abrasion from their diet.
Oh, I'm curious about pain management, because you were talking about like flap surgery, and we're talking about crocodiles getting things like yanked out, fragments and stuff. Is there pain management after like these types of dental care?
Absolutely. I speak from the zoo industry. You know, we are much more attuned to controlling pain. I mean, most of us would consider it malpractice if some effort isn't taken. Certainly, if you're doing an extraction, now we do study the nerve blocks, at least in canids and felids. So we have an idea where to go on, but some of the animals we just don't really know. So we might have to try to do something local or just guess. But we try to do, definitely try to do a good nerve block when we're doing something painful, or at least local, and then certainly post-operative pain control. For us, usually that's a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory that we know is safe. It's a little harder for us to use opioids, but we are also able to do that in some cases.
Yeah, and from the companion animal side, I'm very similar. So it's not possible to get a really thorough awake exam on any animal. I don't care if your dog is the best, most well-trained dog on earth. I cannot examine everything with them awake. So I do the best I can. And we teach people, do the best you can on an awake exam. Get an idea for what's going on in there. Are you looking at periodontal disease? Are you looking at fractured teeth? Are you looking at malocclusion? What do you think you're going to be dealing with? And then in my practice, we actually have owners stick around for about an hour. So we get at the day of the procedure. So we do a consult and then we have them come back. We do the procedure. We have them stick around for about an hour or so. We get the animal under anesthesia. I get a complete exam, probe every tooth, do full mouth x-rays. And then I'll actually call the owner back into the room, into the treatment area, and show them what we're finding, because I find that education is absolutely key. And if people understand why I want to extract a tooth or why this tooth needs a root canal, then they're more accepting of the cost, because it's not cheap. What I do, you know, anesthesia for everything. And people are always like, oh, it's not this expensive at my dentist. Well, yeah, you've got dental insurance and we don't have to knock you out. You know, we don't have to breathe for you. Everything I do gets nerve blocks. Everything. I mean, I don't care if I'm doing bonded sealants, because I can't tell how painful an animal is. So they get nerve blocks. Absolutely. It allows us, you know, good pre-meds, pre-operative opioids, intraoperative nerve blocks, and then post-operative nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. We're using a lot of gabapentin now too for these guys for a few days after, and or opioids, depending on what we're doing. And that's generally for 3 to 5 days after. If I'm just doing a root canal, they're getting it for a day or two. If I'm doing extractions, they're getting it for 5 to 7. So just kind of depends. But they can't talk to us. They can't tell us when something hurts.
Yeah, that's kind of why I was like, oh, how do you know?
We don't. They were so hurting. I always assume that they hurt. And I tell owners all the time, I mean, these teeth are loose. Do you think it would feel good to have a loose tooth? I mean, I knocked my central incisor out when I was in my 20s, like half, knocked it in half, nerve hanging out and everything. And I tell people it was one of the most acutely painful things that has ever happened to me in my life. So I'm not going to take the chance that, you know, and dental sensitivity alone doesn't feel good.
My question, we were talking about like why we need extractions and root canals, a lot of fractures, things like that. And my head is kind of like, okay, so where does disease etiology start with these animals? And if we weren't making them companions, or they weren't living under, you know, with humans, would they have had the same disease etiology, like out in the wild, like periodontal disease and decay, fractures? I'm assuming, is that like from fighting, or why does that happen?
So I would say that the etiology is the same. We know periodontal disease in companion pets has gotten much worse because of the way we breed them. We breed them to be tiny. They still have to have the same number of teeth, and they just don't have the room for it. So we get crowding, and there's just a lot of places for plaque to hide. Caries are not common at all. In dogs, the study that was done, it's 5.4% incidence rate of caries in dogs. They don't have the same carbohydrate laden diets that we, you know, it's not an issue. In certain teeth, it can be, like, it tends to show up in the maxillary first molars in dogs, tends to be overrepresented in German Shepherds. Don't ask me why, but that's what we get. It's the one tooth that they have a big occlusal pit. So that kind of explains all that, but the rest of their teeth are just shaped differently. So periodontal disease, I think we see a lot more of it now because one, we're breeding dogs to be smaller and smaller. And two, we're keeping them alive so much longer, right? So fractured teeth, they break them on everything. They break them mostly on the things that we give them to chew on. So you give your dog bones, real bones. They shouldn't be chewing on real bones. There are a lot of toys out there. I don't want to throw anybody totally under the bus, but there are certain brands that I absolutely hate because they are just too hard. So I teach clients, if you can't indent it with your fingernail, your dog shouldn't be chewing on it. The only real bones we recommend are raw, meaty knuckle bones. Once the meat is gone, take it away. They're not gourmands. They're not trying to get to marrow because it tastes so good. They're trying to get to marrow because they're starving, right? No lion is out there trying to get to the delicious marrow in that wildebeest femur. They're just trying to get anything. And my mentor actually has video of a safari he did in Africa. Big cats. It was a dead hippo. And of course, the veterinarians that were on the trip all wanted to go see the dead hippo. You could smell it for like a mile. It was rotting. It had been out there for like 3 days. And they went out one day and, you know, there was hyenas out there. They went out the next day because, oh, we want to go see what's out there now, right? Because we're veterinarians and we're not fazed by bad smells while we're trying to eat or anything else. And they went out the next day and there were two male lions out there. And Dr. Nemec got these great up-close videos. This lion had like three fractured canines. You could see rotten pulp in there. Didn't matter. That lion was chewing on that thing like it was the best meal it had eaten in months, right? It was just going to town, just digging into this rotting hippo with broken teeth. So wild animals don't live as long. You know, your dog won't complain. Your cat won't complain about having a broken tooth because they just need to keep going. It doesn't matter if the pulp has been exposed for 3 years. They keep eating. They don't stop eating from oral disease. There are very, very, very few things that will, oral diseases that will cause a pet to stop eating. Two that I can think of, one in the dog and one in the cat. That's it. They will eat through anything.
So I'll touch on, the fact that animals are living longer. That's certainly something we see in the zoos. We've certainly extended lifespan under managed care of these animals. So we see more dental issues in our older animals. Now, fractures, they do happen. It's unfortunate when it happens from some sort of caging. We try to definitely avoid that or during a transport. We had an African painted dog. We fed the group, the pack, a hog carcass, part of a hog carcass. And we basically saw her jump up and take a bite out of it. And she came down and that tooth just popped right out. She fractured one of her canines right at the gum line. That was unexpected. We felt really bad that it happened. She didn't really show signs of discomfort, but we could tell before we even examined her that that's what had happened. And we basically arranged to manage that tooth as soon as we could.
What was that management? What does that look like when that happens?
For her, I think we ended up extracting that one. We usually try to save canines because they're obviously very important in the mouth. To be honest, I can't remember if we saved that one or not. But I know we did something to manage her comfort.
We see the same injury a lot in working dogs. So I personally and professionally believe that every police dog out there should have all four of its canines fully crowned before they go to work. They break their teeth all the time. You know, they do crazy stuff, right? And I see dogs break their teeth. They're playing with their housemate dog and they get it caught in the collar and they snap it off. The thing about animal teeth, canids and felids, because that's mostly what we're dealing with. These teeth are huge. I show my dentist pictures of things that I've done and x-rays. And he's like, I cannot believe you extract those. That is insane. The root of a dog canine is 100 to 150% the length of the crown. So if you have a crown that's a centimeter and a half long, you've got a root that is at least that long again and probably longer. It actually, in the mandibles, the rostral mandibles in dogs and cats is almost entirely tooth. There's very little bone anywhere around there. So we We try really, really hard never to extract mandibular canines in cats and dogs if we can help it. This is where I will tell clients all day, the extraction is almost as expensive as the root canal, and it's going to greatly weaken the integrity of the front of your dog's jaw. So even if a tooth is broken off at the gum line, my preference is to root canal it if we can. We can't always. Even if it's at the gum line and they're not going to have any crown there, we want to root canal it because we want to keep the strength of the jaw. We want to keep that structure intact as much as we can. Kind of a gee whiz thing about dogs and cats.
So I know we're kind of like getting down to our time, and I have so many more questions, but if I had to choose one, I'm really curious about the similarities in our instruments that we use on human teeth versus what you use on animal teeth, and does it even change from animal to animal or types of animals? There's so many teeth you have to know.
Dr. Ribkin can talk about, let's say we do a root canal on a tiger or a lion. You know, you've got to pretty much enter that. If you're doing a canine tooth, pretty much have to enter labially. Is it 60 millimeters? What's the length of the?
It depends on which company. We've got some new, I've got a fancy new, it's the Endo IQ. You guys probably use them too. It's a nice little reciprocating file system, Nitai file system. Those are 70. The veterinary length files are 70, but generally our endodontic files are anywhere from 60 up to about 120 millimeters, depending on the species that we're working on. Dog canines, you generally can't go smaller than a 60 millimeter. So it's all the same stuff. We just sometimes have things that are longer or bigger. I don't know how big. I have sold a couple of files to a dentist here at the dental school here in New Orleans. Called me up. He's like, I've got this guy. He's got a 31 millimeter canal, and I don't have anything long enough. Do you have anything you can share? I'm like, yeah, I got some stuff. You know, what size do you, what ISOs do you need? And he sent his resident over to pick him up because he didn't have anything long enough. So longer and bigger, you know, young dogs. I mean, I think the biggest files I have are an ISO 140, and sometimes that's not even large enough. I don't know if there are any human teeth that are that. I don't know. I've never done a human endodontics, but everything else is the same. You know, I use all the same burrs and scalers and curettes and hand instruments. I've, like I said, my drill's the same. It's all the same stuff, just sometimes a little longer, a little bigger.
So, I mean, are you opening up your dental book and like that's how you're ordering it? Or is it through the like your normal ordering system? It just happens to have the same instrument.
So I get most of my equipment from Schein or Patterson. There are a couple of veterinary specific places that do, you know, IM3 ships. I get a lot of stuff through Dentsply, but they don't have any of the They have the veterinary length reciprocating files, these Nitai files. That's something that they developed for the veterinary market a few years ago, and we were very happy about it because we were having a hard time getting some of the older versions. They were discontinued. They discontinue stuff on us all the time. We're just veterinarians. There are fewer than 200 veterinary dentists in the world. We're not that huge a market, but we do have some veterinary specific places that we order from to get those specialty, you know, 60 millimeter paper points and gutta percha and the long stuff that we need, but everything else is the same.
I know we don't have time, but I want to know about sterilization processes first before we're done. Can you walk us through like what that looks like after like a procedure of how you clean and sterilize your instruments?
Like in my practice, in the dental practice, because I only do dentistry, I don't do anything else. So we clean and autoclave everything. I mean, I have periodontal packs and I have extraction packs. I've got vital pulp packs and surgical endo packs, and everything is thoroughly cleaned. The whole regular sterilization product process that we would use for abdominal surgery, we use for dental surgery, and we open sterile packs for each patient.
Yeah. I actually sent a question to my state board, and the response came back, and it was like response answered, and it was like reason vet/dental. And I was like, what are we lumped together in the state board? Like what? I'm not connecting the dots, but maybe now I am.
That's it.
So are there any, just as our, like our last thing, I would love to hear what your favorite, well, let's see, do I want to say favorite procedure or your favorite animal to work on?
Do animal. Molly wants to do animal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We definitely want to do what Molly wants. What's your favorite animal then to do procedures on and also just in general?
Molly, that's not a fair question.
Because they're all so awesome, right?
Too many to choose from. I always say my answer is a little cliche. I really like working on the large cats, so lions and tigers, because it just is really cool. But even if we're doing a root canal on one of them, I mean, it's a huge tooth that we're trying to deal with. And it's just very interesting that we can get it done and get it done well.
Yeah, that's so amazing. Dr. Ripka?
I don't get to work on a whole lot of different animals anymore, unless Bob invites me over to the zoo. You know, again, I'm a veterinarian because of monkeys and because of monkey teeth. I don't know that I have a favorite animal to do dentistry on, per se. I do have a favorite. I do love to do crowns. Crown preps is like the closest we get, real, and restorations. It's like the closest we get to art. And I really enjoy that. It's so sad. It's always nerve-wracking because I'm never sure the thing is going to fit, but it's so satisfying when it does. And most of the time it's not a problem. I haven't gotten to do crowns on monkeys. I don't think that's going to go, but
that's so cool. Andrew, anything else?
No, I went through the getting a chairside milling machine in my head for these animals, for these dogs and these cats, these animals they are working on. I'm like, I don't know if the CAD CAM technology is there yet for animals, but that'd be awesome.
So I don't do chairside. I send it to a lab in California that's been doing crowns for veterinary species for a couple of decades now. They do a really great job. They have a ceramic one that they say is great, and they've got it on a polar bear somewhere, supposedly. My colleagues and I don't really, we stick with all metal, titanium alloy, but we do have them do it. It's CAD CAM when they actually make them for us. So we get really precise, good stuff.
I would love to see a gold crown on a lion's canine.
Oh my gosh.
It's too soft. What?
No.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
Soft? It's too soft.
Oh, too malleable.
Too soft.
So, oh, darn.
I have people ask all the time, can I have gold?
No gold. Oh,
I can send you pictures. I can send you pictures.
Right? I would love to see it. I would actually like blow it up and put it in my office and like different types of teeth and dentistry. Well, I'm really excited that we had this conversation. Like I said, I have so many questions and not enough time, but I really do appreciate you guys taking the time and chatting with us and telling our dental world a little bit about your dental world. Would you like to share any contact information or where people can find you or your zoo and anything, any details like that? You're welcome to share.
Well, I work for the Audubon Nature Institute. It's audubonnatureinstitute.org. And we have a family of parks in New Orleans. Come visit.
I will.
She really will.
And I will like to brush some teeth.
They're fantastic facilities, Michelle. We'll set you up. We'll get you on a tour.
Dr. Ripka?
Yeah, so it's Gulf South Veterinary Dentistry and Oral Surgery, and our website is dogbeachvet.com. That takes you to the Veterinary Dental Specialties and Oral Surgery home page for all of our locations. We're, like I said, we're all over the place.
Well, thank you both, and we hope you have a wonderful day and lots of healthy animals coming your way.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, another great week, another great episode. We thank you all so much for listening each week. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button, whatever podcasting app you're using. Also, just a reminder, our guests are so fantastic that they love when you reach out. They love when you interact with them on social media. And you can interact with us on social media as well at Instagram or Facebook. We're also on LinkedIn. You can find us at A Tale of Two Hygienists. You can also go to our website, atale2hygienist.com. And we would love for you to go there and subscribe for our newsletter. We have lots of stuff on our website. We have a learning center. You can search for any episode. This is an easy place for you to find the links for our CE courses and take the test. There's just so much more there. So head over to atale2hygienist.com. And if you want, you can also send us an email. I'm Michelle at atale2hygienist.com. And then there's Andrew. Who is Andrew at atale2hygienist.com. And we just want to say thank you so much. If you love this episode and you're loving the podcast, we would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review. And, you know, 5-star, go ahead and do it. 5-star, just hit that 5-star and then leave us a review. We really appreciate it. We love reading them. It fuels our fire and we just appreciate you guys so much. I think that's it, Andrew. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye, y'all.